Hello, and welcome to 4x4 is the Most Accurate Podcast. I'm your host, John Paulson, and today I'm joined by the president of the Cordero Patterson Fan Club. He's also an avid Drew Lock supporter. It's Ian Hartitz of Fantasy Life. How's it going, Ian?
Great day to be great. As always, John, love catching up with you. And yeah, sadly, my dude CPAT, you know, a little too free for my liking right now. Hoping he finds a new home in Kansas City or somewhere like that soon. And we got Drew Lock, who either is or is not competing for the New York Giants starting quarterback job. So, you know, sadly, we've had the Duke Johnsons, the Auden Tate love over the years. Those guys not really looking at a football job right now. But you know what? We watch the film. We find new random backup-ish players to support, and we move on.
Did you know that Duke Johnson is the leading rusher in University of Miami?
You don't say. There's been a lot of good running backs go through that program, John. You better be sure before you say something like that.
But yeah, he's a talented back and never
and we
really
literally,
got, never...
John. Like, we let the bright minds of Bill O'Brien and Hugh Jackson change us as a society and believe that to use all-time leading rusher is a scat back. Get out of here with that.
Yep. My dad actually played 1 year at University of Miami as a tight end. And he decided to leave, transfer to a smaller school up in the Midwest because they weren't really interested in academics there, if you can believe it.
Where are you going to the Midwest?
North Dakota State, I think. He bounced around a couple schools. He played basketball and football in college. So quite the dual sport athlete.
Can you imagine, like, North Dakota State kids are like, holy shit, we got this dude from the U coming in. Like, this is going to be nuts.
Well, he was kind of a corn-fed guy from Arkansas. So, he was already kind of fit in there.
Fair enough.
All right, enough about my pops. We're going to discuss the fantasy free agency frenzy here in a minute. And also a few things that Ian learned during the 2023 fantasy football season. I've been doing the Things We Learned series here. But first, I want to let everyone know that, like recent guests Pat Fitzmaurice and Andy Behrens before him, Ian will be a member of the inaugural Point Per First Down League that we're putting together this season to promote a far superior scoring system to PPR. So, Ian, in your own words, why is Point Per First Down far superior to PPR?
Because it better reflects and attributes scoring to good things happening on the football field. You know, I do these mock tweets, you know, almost every week where, like, you'll see a 2 yard check down to a running back where he just gets absolutely blasted, does not, you know, third and long, doesn't help anything. All right. And that's 1.2 PPR points, the same as Derrick Henry breaking 7 tackles and dragging 3 dudes on his way to getting 12 yards. It doesn't add up. And I think it honestly, at the end of the day, like, this is one of the things that can give fantasy football a bad name in some circles. Like, we see pass catching, high volume pass catching running backs, and really rushing heavy quarterbacks. By the way, one thing, John, I don't know if we have the rules set yet. If we could subtract a point for quarterbacks when they take a sack, I think that would probably fix the other side of things. Because again, we get this, you know, oh, fantasy and bio, this person doesn't know anything about ball. It's that reputation, and I think those are the two kind of archetypes that really don't do us any favors, because otherwise, all the stats we talk about are pretty much the same thing, quote-unquote, real-life non-fantasy fans are talking about. If we just took fantasy points and named it impact points and served out, you know, point totals for touchdowns, receptions, receiving yards, I feel like we're, you know, a couple months away from some, like, analytics dude, like, coming up with fantasy points, but, like, not realizing it's actually already just fantasy football. So, again, I think it's, again, these high-volume receiving running backs and also the rushing quarterbacks where, yeah, guess what? We're playing a game. We're trying to win money. I'm going to keep attacking that. But if our goal is to try to best reflect and reward points for what's happening on the football field, I do not believe that simply catching the football is worthy of getting a first down and getting 10 yards.
I fully agree. And I'm putting this league together with a lot of big names still to announce. And I turned 50 this year, Ian, last year. And I started thinking about my legacy. And I was like, what can I do to try to tilt the fantasy landscape one way or the other? And I decided that my goal is to really promote point per first down. A lot of different platforms have the scoring now, and you can put it into your league settings. Now, I'm getting a lot of pushback, and I get the, oh, let's do half PPR, half point per first down. You just got to cut the cord. No more PPR. And just think about this stat. When I did it, I did a study a while ago. 70% of receptions result in a first down. So you're already going to get the point per first down for a lot of those catches. So don't worry about the PPR. Just cut the cord, let it go, and just go to point per first down. I like your idea about the negative points for sacks. I'm thinking pretty big negative points for interceptions. And I'm also wondering point per first down passing for quarterbacks. Now that would be interesting. We're gonna have some big scoring.
I don't hate it. I like the point on interceptions. A lot of leagues, it's standard interceptions minus one and fumbles are minus two. That's never quite added up to me. And yeah, the sacks. It's the only play on offense that just nothing happens in fantasy. Like, okay, if you have a DST score, you're getting a point for that. But to have a negative outcome be reached and nobody lose fantasy points just doesn't seem to make sense. I'm happy it's not rushing yards. Like, it's always a pain in the ass. Like, you look at – we have people out there that don't think Caleb Williams is a dual-threat quarterback because they just look at his, you know, 3.3 yards per carry. It's like, yeah, that's pretty much all sacks when we actually get down to the nitty-gritty of it. So, but yeah, man, the first down thing, love it. Also, shout out – I read an article yesterday from Ryan Heath, a little up-and-coming guy in our industry doing great work over at Fantasy Points, where he was able to show that, you know, it's very close, like the correlation is like literally 0.01 away. But the yards per first downs per route run, first downs per route run might actually be more correlated to fantasy production than yards per route run. And it kind of makes sense because when you think about the yards per route run, you do get some of the outliers, the guys like Rashid Shaheed who are popping at the top. Deontay Hardy was like that a couple years ago. And you can see them kind of popping more so by these, you know, bigger plays, more volatile, better in best ball type of moments. So again, there's a lot there with the first downs. Obviously, it's what NFL teams are trying to achieve out there. Why shouldn't we be trying to do the same thing in fantasy land?
I love it. And I expected this conversation to last about a minute. It lasted 5 or 6 minutes, so I can
tell you. We can go 60 if you want, John.
I can tell you're passionate about it. I'm glad to have you in the league. It's going to be fun this year. I think we're going to add a charity aspect to it as well.
So. Awesome.
I want to mention one article that I posted earlier this week. It's my bracket, March Madness bracket picks. I don't do it every year. I did it this year, looking at several sites that I used, metrics to pick the Final Four, Sweet 16, second round winners. So if you're a 4-4-4 subscriber, you can access it for free. If you're not, haven't yet resubscribed, you might want to so that you can maybe win some money in your pool. I don't win it every year. I don't win my pool every year, but I'm usually in the hunt when the Final Four comes, and that's all you could really ask for out of your bracket. So check that out. So let's dive in. It's been a big week and week plus of free agency. There's a lot to talk about. Let's start with the players that we thought might hit free agency, but then were re-signed by their teams. The Buccaneers, Mike Evans, Baker Mayfield both re-sign. They did lose their offensive coordinator, Dave Canales, to the Panthers. He's the head coach there, so something to pay attention to with the Panthers' offense might be improved because he did a great job with Baker Mayfield this year. He also helped Geno Smith to a career year in Seattle. Might be a quarterback whisperer. We got to keep an eye on him. Baker had a career year. Can he keep it up is one question I have. We have Mike Evans coming off of a 1,255-yard season, 13 touchdowns. He was the fantasy wide receiver 4. I do wonder if, you know, at his advanced age, I would say he's still in his prime, but towards the tail end of it, was free agency a big motivator for him to have such a big year? Are we expecting more of the same of these two, or are they going to take a step back?
I think with Evans, first and foremost, what's wild is if you actually went back, and this was, I believe, his second most productive season ever in terms of fantasy points per game. So incredible year, but honestly, like I would have assumed Baker would have held him back a little bit. It was kind of the opposite. I mean, Baker was one of the most impacted quarterbacks last year, I believe 8th in terms of EPA lost because of drops. And while Evans makes a ton of catches that he has no business making, there were a few pretty brutal drop touchdowns on film last year. So if anything, I actually think you can argue that Evans even has a little more room to grow. We'll see if Father Time has anything to say about that. But again, same situation, you know, back looking at another large, you know, wide receiver 1 worthy target share. I don't think we should just assume that Mike Evans is going to be falling off a cliff because we haven't seen that on field. Baker's where it gets a little more interesting, man. Fantastic playoff stretch. I mean, having those, you know, back-to-back games with 3+ touchdowns. I found this hilarious, John. So over the past 5 years, Patrick Mahomes has 7 playoff games with at least 3 touchdowns. Josh Allen has 4. Next is Baker Mayfield with 3. more than Brady, more than Prescott, more than Rodgers, more than all these other guys. So, hey, there is something about, you know, rising up to the occasion, but I really think getting to face the Eagles and the Lions, let's face it, two of the lesser secondaries in the league, maybe clouded our kind of remembrance of what this offense was. I mean, let's not act like this was a juggernaut all season long, ended up being ranked 20th in terms of points per game. And yeah, Baker, he has some stats that say he was pretty damn good. EPA per dropback, he was 9th last season, 12th in yards per attempt. 22nd in completion percentage over expected, though. 18th in PFF pass grade. I'm happy Baker got paid. It's awesome. I think he's taken a lot of unfair flack over the year. I mean, this over the years, this guy led Cleveland to their first playoff win in, what, 25 years. Had another, you know, his rookie season. He set the freaking NFL rookie passing touchdown record before Justin Herbert broke it. So I don't think Baker has been as bad as people kind of made him out to be during his, you know, final torn labrum year in Cleveland and then that Carolina debacle. So, you know, better than that for sure. But do we really think all of a sudden that we're going to have Baker going out there and just absolutely lighting up the league when they haven't really changed anything? They lost Canales, as you said. You know, we're bringing back Evans, Godwin, another year older. I don't think they're going to really add too much else in the draft that's going to be a needle mover. Look, I'm okay. Baker and them probably doing a similar, you know, encore in a, as always, not all that great NFC South, but I would caution in terms of getting expectations too high. Wouldn't be shocked if we see Baker fall back to earth just a little bit in 2024.
It was pretty wild to see Baker with, you know, it's good passing numbers, you know, more than what we expected out of him heading into last year. And Chris Godwin finishing wide receiver 33, playing 16 games. That's like super depressing as a Godwin fan, huh?
Yeah, and honestly, I mean, he was the guy that I thought, if you just go through some of the misses, like there were, when I do my Sheesh report on a Tuesday over at fantasylife.com, you know, kind of breaking down the beyond the box score type of moments, the overthrows when guys were open, you know, and things like that. Godwin was the guy that really was missing out more times than not. So if anyone's going to be in for a bounce back, I think it'd be Godwin. And, you know, wouldn't be surprised at all, John, if we look at these ADPs where, let's face it, in past years, it was, you know, especially when Brady was there, like Evans would be wide receiver 15, Godwin's like wide receiver 17. We've seen these guys simultaneously ball out together all the time, like, you know, all due respect to Trey Palmer and Kate Otten and Rashad White, but I don't think any of those guys are necessarily unseating either dude as the 1A, 1B. I think that discrepancy between Evans and Godwin this year could be a bit too wide. Might be a nice value bounce back opportunity for Godwin.
Yeah, we might be staring at Chris Godwin in the 7th or 8th round going, how's a guy this talented going at this point in the draft?
Yeah.
But, you know, I think he'll be, I did see a stat, I don't remember what it was, I have to look into it, but like red zone targets for Godwin last year relative to touchdowns, I think he was way under his expected touchdowns, so he could bounce back there. All right, Dalton Schultz re-signed with the Texans. Now he was drafted tight end 15 and turned in tight end 10 numbers. He missed a couple games. CJ Stroud obviously just way exceeded our expectations at the quarterback position for the Texans. So that's one aspect of why this whole offense kind of took off. But he, you know, Schultz has had a kind of a weird year because there's so many injuries in that receiving core with Tank Dell in and out, Noah Brown in and out. It seemed like he was not a primary target when those guys were all healthy, but when Dell and Brown were out, he all of a sudden, you know, raised up. Do you think he's a tight end one heading into this coming season? I know the position's a little bit deeper, but if I mean, Noah Brown's a free agent, I think. So Collins, Dell back. Is he?
I think Brown's back actually too, though.
Oh, okay. Do you think he's going to be signed?
Yeah, I think they brought him back, and I honestly wouldn't be surprised. There was some murmurs that they were I forget which wide receiver that they were kind of whispering about in the trade. They didn't obviously trade for a wide receiver yet, but there were some murmurs that the Texans were in on one. So I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, I think they actually traded their first round pick, so they don't even have one this year. But hey, this wide receiver class so deep in rounds 2 and 3, wouldn't be surprised if they add another one. But no, everything you're saying, man, makes sense. We have those numbers. Hey, if you guys listened to me last year, there's a good chance I slandered Dalton Schultz. It was one of my biggest misses of 2023. So I know he didn't crush it, but for me looking at it, like you guys see the amount of money tight ends get. And to see Schultz last year only get $6 million for 1 year from the Texans, I didn't trust that. I didn't like that watching Cowboys games that Jake Ferguson looked just as good as Dalton Schultz. Now, probably could have thought a little bit deeper and realized both those guys are pretty good at football out there. And I just figured, as much as I am a, you know, Ohio State Buckeye, just super fan, Columbus, Ohio lifer, I didn't think Straub was going to walk into that organization and light the freaking league on fire like he did. So everything came together for Schultz. But I'll say, John, like, I don't think it was all that fluky. Schultz went out there, you know, solid, just possession kind of tight end that these young quarterbacks like to be able to lean on. And yeah, you know, I've seen the splits when Nico and Tank Dell and those guys were also healthy. It wasn't as easy for Dalton Schultz, but that applies to a lot of guys, the George Kittles, the Dallas Goddards of the world, who, yes, I do think are better than Dalton Schultz. But hey, at this point with the Stroud factor, I'm almost more willing to take a chance on Schultz later because I'm more confident in Stroud putting up numbers than those other quarterbacks in run first offenses. So right now, you know, so early with these drafts, but I have been dabbling a little bit over at Underdog Fantasy, and having Schultz, you know, tight end 14, Hockenson should continue to fall once people fully realize he's going to miss the first half of next season. So with Schultz, he's kind of like sitting pretty as that last tight end who we're confident is going to be the lead guy on their team, especially after getting that big money extension and in a passing offense that we actually feel pretty good about. So not going out of my way to get him, but I don't think we even have to at this point. Round 10-ish as that borderline tight end one, I think Schultz is perfectly fine in 2024 and probably beyond.
Yeah, I'm looking at early ADP right now. Hockenson 12, Goddard 13, Kmet at 14, which seems a little bit low, and then Dalton Schultz at 15. Good value. Same place he went last year, tight end 15.
Yeah, I wonder what Kmet is. Just comes down to, you know, having Waldron there, history with the Rams and Seahawks of rotating guys, and then they bring in his old friend Gerald Everett. Could be a situation where I know Kmet's gotten paid, and honestly, he's impressed me the last couple of years. Some of those contested catches, ESPN receiver ratings or advanced analytics, not perfect, but I appreciate them, you know, trying to do this. It had Kmet as like the single highest catch rating of any tight end last year. So again, not calling, you know, him bad or anything like that, but you know, we see these teams, even Buffalo, when Knox was healthy last year, like Kincaid was doing good things, but there's only so much you can do with a 55 or 60% route rate. Could be the case in Chicago.
Keenan Allen arriving might soak up a few targets too. We'll talk about that in a bit. Michael Pittman re-signed. Now, is this, I was wondering about where he might land if they were going to franchise him. And you're right about Noah Brown, by the way. He signed on March 11th. Somehow that missed, I missed that one. So kudos to you, Ian. You get a point for that. Pittman resigns. Anthony Richardson back at quarterback. I think the perception is that maybe the passing attack was better with Gardner Minshew, but Richardson actually was better than expected as a passer. In the two games, foolish games, that Anthony Richardson played with Pittman, Pittman had 8 for 97 and a touchdown on 11 targets. We like that. And then he had 1 for 15 on 5 targets. He did target Pittman on 26.2% of his pass attempts, but he only averaged 6.46 yards per attempt on those targets. So that's pretty of a poor of a connection to start. But it's, you know, it's a rookie, a youngish receiver. They're trying to get on the same page. I just wanted to also point out 2.6 games of action. Richardson was on pace for about 222 yards and 1.15 touchdowns per game. Minshew averaged 229 and 1.08 in his 13 full games as a starter. So I don't think this difference in terms of the passing game is so stark. It just seems like that connection between Richardson and Pittman is a little bit needs some work. So where do you think you're going to have Pittman ranked heading into the season now that he's re-signed with the Colts?
I'm a little more worried about the overall kind of passing volume in Indy more so than in a sort of drop off from Minshew and Richardson last year, weeks 1 through 5. I know it's a little off because he missed week 3 and there was, you know, the two games where he only played about half of them, but Colts were 24th in terms of pass play rate in, again, those first 5 weeks of the season. And then once Minshew comes under center, you know, they went up to 17. So still a fairly balanced offense. And I think we'll see that again, but I don't know what it is, man. Like, I like Gardner Minshew, perfectly good backup quarterback. You know, could he be this generation's kind of Ryan Fitzpatrick, sort of like journeyman? Yeah, absolutely. Come on, though, guys, and especially the Raiders. What the hell are you guys doing? If we don't see them take one of those top six quarterbacks next, you know, April 25th and April 26th, John, I am going to be furious because last year, 32 qualified quarterbacks, the two worst in terms of completion percentage over expected, Gardner Minshew and Aiden O'Connell. So Gardner, congrats on your absolutely hilarious Pro Bowl bid, but you cannot find an advanced stat that paints Minshew as anything other than a dirt average to honestly pretty bad NFL quarterback. So sadly, it's the NFL where, you know, if you're a top 30, closer to 30 quarterback, you know, we all just say that you suck. So I get it, but man, what are you doing in Vegas? So with Richardson, again, it comes down to more of the idea, like how pass heavy are they actually going to be? But I will say, man, seeing Joe freaking Flacco as that backup has got to give you some good vibes if we do see Richardson not able to actually go out there and stay healthy again. So I'm very optimistic. I mean, one of the big things kind of going around in the draft circles right now is just the reliability with looking at quarterbacks and their pressure to sack ratio, because we have learned more and more about how much sacks are more of a quarterback stat than offensive lines. And we repeatedly see the best quarterbacks in college and into the NFL be really good at not letting many of their pressures actually be converted into sacks. So promising with that from Richardson. Some of the freaking throws, especially early on in that Rams game he was making last year, truly did show that upside and his ability to, you know, for better and for worse, especially with his legs too, threaten every square inch of that football field. So I think Pittman catching passes from Richardson and Flacco is fine, man. Comes down to the reality, like, how explosive, I guess, can he be? Because Pittman, I think he's going to have the target share to be a top 15 fantasy wide receiver, pretty much regardless of format. Can he get into that top five, though? That's where it becomes a little bit more questionable. So, hey, honestly, and it's kind of almost similar to last year, where you could argue that his fantasy ceiling would just be higher if somehow Flacco did end up starting more of these games over Richardson. What a time to be saying that in the year 2024. But overall, Pittman, I think he's going about right, man.
Yeah, he's going wide receiver 18. I currently have him in wide receiver 19. I just double checked, but we have,
it's about right.
These are just my early rankings, not my.
I'm holding you to it for the rest of time.
Yeah, that's how. Well, it's March, so. All right, let's talk about team or players changing teams. RB running back musical chairs. I wrote this together and I all of a sudden decided, okay, I'm going to combine these two because they're all connected here. I'm just going to read them off here. DeAndre Swift to Chicago, Saquon Barkley replacing Swift in Philly, Devin Singletary replacing Barkley in New York, Mixon, traded to the Texans, Zach replacing Singletary, and then Zach Moss being signed by the Bengals to replace Joe Mixon. The Bears, you know, they had Khalil Herbert, who was actually pretty good when he was healthy last year. Roshan Johnson as well. The Bears running backs combined for 72 total catches. I do think Swift has 40 or 50 catch upside again. The Eagles don't really throw to their backs. What do you think about Swift landing in Chicago?
That whole Swift thing last year was wild because, again, we heard all offseason long, as we do every offseason, that this was going to change. They were going to throw to him. And they really did during the first, you know, 10 or so games of the season. But he was averaging like 70 receiving yards per game down the stretch of last year. So did good things on the ground. I mean, if football fields were only 99 yards long, like DeAndre Swift would have been a first team all pro last season. So obviously not the most fantasy friendly environment for running backs. I think Chicago is a good sign, but some of those same problems, man, I think all are going to be persisting, at least to some extent, with Caleb Williams. Don't think we're going to see Caleb, you know, getting the tush push every single time from the 1 yard line or anything. But if you will, just, you know, pull up his game tape for a couple, you know, plays, you're going to see that similar, you know, longer time to throw that Justin Fields and honestly all kind of dual threat quarterbacks have, and accordingly more scrambles as opposed to checkdowns that you get from more stationary QBs. So, you know, even if Caleb Williams ends up being 10 times a quarterback of, say, someone like Kirk Cousins, in terms of which offense and which quarterback you want your fantasy running back to be on, we will take those pocket passers at 9 times out of 10. So Chicago, to me, an upgrade over Philly specifically, because I'm more confident in Swift commanding that full-time role. I mean, $24 million over 3 years. I don't think we're going to see a Kenneth Gainwell type person starting over DeAndre Swift in week one and needing an injury to happen. That everyone seems to kind of forget about that with the DeAndre Swift 2024 season. So great news for him and honestly all these guys. Saquon to Philly getting paid. You mentioned Mixon. I mean, Zach Moss, Devin Singletary, Josh Jacobs with the Packers, even Aaron Jones after all this, you know, going to Minnesota and finding a pretty good spot there. It's all good for them, man, because we're getting, you know, pretty clear lead backs in a time when, again, committees just run so rampant that it's really hard in the year 2024 to expect any team to feature one singular workhorse. So my only thing is, like, can we stop with the Philly and Green Bay have been making so many good moves for so many years that we have to, like, make up these narratives to try to rationalize why they just gave these aging running backs so much money. You know what I'm saying? Because, like, I think if any other team out there gives Saquon the $36 million, we're like, what the hell are you guys doing? Have you watched this dude over the past 3 years? But because it was Howie and Philly, we're like, oh no, this is sharp by Philly, because they're actually realizing the inefficiency in the market. That's what all the draft and just, you know, free free agency people want to tell us. So, hey, in Fantasyland, we'll take it. Happy to see running backs get paid, and it makes our job much easier when we see that sort of money thrown at them. We can be that much more confident in a featured role. But from a team building perspective, man, Philly and Green Bay, what are you guys doing?
Interesting note on Barkley, and I'm wondering about this move to Philly, if it's a good or bad for his fantasy value. I mean, it's obviously a better offense, so they'll have more red zone chances, but he's not going to get the goal line carries. Swift's receptions dropped from 3.4 with the Lions in his last season with the Lions to 2.4 receptions per game with the Eagles. So Barkley has been kind of propped up by his receiving in some of these seasons here with the Giants. So I'm a little concerned about Barkley. I think he is a low end RB1, but I don't know. Like, I don't see the 15, 16 touchdown upside that some of these other guys have. So a little concerned there.
Crazy stat here with Saquon. Eagles running backs since Hurts took over in 2021. Eagles running backs rush attempts between the 2 and 5 yard lines. They're first. Nobody has more. From specifically just the 1 yard line, 30th. So Saquon can just barge those in because he's going to get opportunities from the 5, from the 4. If he can get across and just not give Hurts that chance, maybe he does have 15, 16 touchdown upside. Maybe they don't tush push as much without Jason Kelce in there. But yeah, man, it's tough. And it's not like we only see this in Philly, man. Baltimore, Buffalo, Seattle to an extent with Russell Wilson over the years. Like, if you have a Marshawn Lynch who's going to get 300 plus touches, okay, they're going to be fine. Just like Saquon, I think will be fine enough here. But hey, those that touchdown spike can be the difference between a running back, borderline RB1 and a top 3 guy. I mean, we understand how yards per carry is one of the more meaningless stats in fantasy football. Like, give your favorite running back an extra yard per carry on all of their rush attempts, and we're talking about a difference of 20, 30 fantasy points throughout an entire season. Want to chase those touchdowns, want to chase those receptions. Haven't been seeing many of either of those running backs in Philly.
All right, a couple other notes on that group I mentioned. Singletary, he didn't play starter snaps until week 9. From that point on, he was the fantasy RB9, and he was RB20 on a per-game basis. He did well for Houston. I'm looking at his early ADP, and this, I don't think the market is adjusted yet, but he's RB41 off the board. I think he's going to be the bell cow for the Giants. That's a good value there in my mind right now. Mixon, 19.4 touches per game in the last 3 seasons. He was RB7 last year. His yards per carry, I think, I mean, we talked about it just now, but 4.1 yards per carry. He's never been like a big yards per carry guy, but he stays on the field. He catches a lot of passes. I think he's going to be the RB1 in Houston after this trade. Damian Pierce is just kind of fallen off the face of the earth, as it seems, as a guy who heading into last season we thought was, primed for an RB1 season potentially. We are getting clear moves here where we have clarity, which is nice. The last thing is Moss. So what do you think about the Cincinnati backfield? Chase Brown, he had 50 plus total yards in 4 of his last 6 games, but they signed Moss. He had 20.9 touches for 94 yards, 4.12 yards per carry, 6.63 touchdowns in the 8 games where he played at least half the snaps last year for the Colts. That would have been the 8th highest points per game ahead of David Montgomery, just behind Jahmyr Gibbs. I do think he'll share the backfield a little bit, but how much of a timeshare do you see between Moss and Brown?
I think Moss is the more fantasy-friendly option for sure. I mean, I think we're looking at, a basic touchdown-dependent RB2 type of guy. Like, no, we're not going to be drafting him alongside Rashad White and Travis Etienne and Josh Jacobs up in RB1 land. But once we start getting along that RB2 borderline, guys more like Tony Pollard, Najee Harris, Austin Eckler, Jalen Warren, like, those are more so the archetypes I think Moss deserves to go around. So, like Singletary, I think we're going to see the ADP continue to climb up to around that range. I think that's a pretty decent spot for Singletary as well. But yeah, man, kudos to Moss. Was actually Next Gen Stats 5th best running back in terms of rushing yards over expected per carry. And by, looking at things like that, he certainly does seem like an upgrade over Mixon. Where it gets interesting is what to make of Chase Brown, because when you look at the way he was used last year, it does say scat back, a little bit, worrisome. Like, can he actually get the chance to have a full three down role? But, you start looking at the guy, he's not tiny. I think he came out 209 pounds out there, and like, man, the things he can do in the receiving game. I know a couple of these numbers are definitely skewed by him breaking off a couple of, you know, screens for 60, 70 plus yards, but guess what? Not everyone can do that. So yeah, you know, I'm adding that context, but I'm also not in the business of, you know, doing the, oh, take away all the players' good plays and all of a sudden, like, what are they? So last season, three guys hit 22 miles per hour with the football in their hands from Next Gen Stats: Tyreek Hill, DK Metcalf, and none other than Chase Brown. So, hey, he's an explosive pass-catching RB. I think they're going to be a bit more of a closer to 50-50, 60-40 than they were with Mixon, at least. Could Chase Brown eventually take over? I kind of doubt it, but where it gets interesting is if he could be this flex with benefits. Shout out Mike Wright for kind of coining that term over the years. But, you know, can we get something like full PPR friendly RB3, you know, usage out of, you know, Chase Brown, similar to what Jalen Warren brought to the table last year? And then if something happens to Moss, can Chase actually get that full three down role? So they did bring back Travion Williams. That's where I'm a little bit concerned. Like, do they actually trust Chase to be that guy? Because otherwise, then we're looking at more of like a, you know, Antonio Gibson, JD McKissick potential sort of player. So optimistic. And, you know, guess what? The good thing for both these guys, we're in a freaking Bengals offense that was seventh in scoring in 21 and 22 with a healthy Joe Burrow under center. So I think right now the price point is pretty reasonable for both. Don't have a huge, you know, lean. I don't plan on going too overweight at another guy. But, yeah, good things in Cincy. And I think that backfield was more than fine. They did not need to keep going on with the Joe Mixon experience.
Yeah, but Zach Moss going 47. RB 47 off the board right now. Obviously, the market has not adjusted to that either. So you alluded to Josh Jacobs, Aaron Jones. This is painful. I love Aaron Jones. He's my favorite Packer last year, last few years. With everything going on at the quarterback position, Aaron Rodgers moving on to the Jets and acting weird. Really, like, I think they tried to re-sign him or tried to get him to take a restructured deal, and he didn't want to take the pay cut that they were offering. And then I think it's kind of a spite signing with Minnesota. He wants to stick it to the Packers. It's unfortunate that this is the way it ended. They moved on to Josh Jacobs, who's a 26-year-old running back. You don't like this signing, I can gather, from a real world standpoint, but from a fantasy standpoint, Josh Jacobs should probably eat this year. He's got AJ Dillon behind him. I don't see this to be as much of a timeshare because I don't think they have to, you know, protect Josh Jacobs like they did Aaron Jones.
Yeah, it's just volume. And Jacobs, you know, throughout his career, he can handle all three downs. And honestly, the concern that I at least had, you know, when Josh McDaniels was there, and the reason maybe why I was lower than I should have been on Jacobs, at least in 22 when he really broke out, was the presence of guys like Amir Abdullah and even Brandon Bolden just eating into that pass down work. I mean, we had Jalen, you know, Richard back in the day, you know, making it tough for Jacobs to get that full three down roll. So I've never doubted he could have it. I mean, when the Raiders drafted him, they were all talking up the three down roll. Better have that if you're using a first round pick on the guy after all. But it's tough for me, John, because, like, look, Packers, again, such a smart organization. We're talking about like 40 freaking years now running of just having one franchise QB after another. I was one of the idiots who was criticizing them not using, you know, more offseason resources on their wide receiver room. What do? They're now 5-6 deep with guys on rookie contracts who all look like they have some upside. Two great young tight ends. Again, I want to just be careful because everything else is doing good. But what are we doing signing up for 4 years, $48 million for a running back that was objectively one of the worst in the league last year by pretty much any stat? I mean, explosive run play rate, 48th among 49 running backs. I mean, yards after contact per carry, he was 46. Even missed tackles forced per carry, which he's usually been at the top of the league with. I mean, we're talking about outside the top 40 in terms of any stat you want to look at. But what matters most in fantasy? Volume. You don't give a guy $48 million if you don't plan on featuring him in your overall offense. So it's a great offensive environment. I am a Jordan Love believer. I think everything we saw in the second half of the season, you could have seen coming by some of those games he had early on, particularly that Steelers game. I think he didn't even put up big numbers, but just some of the plays he was starting to make off script. You could tell the guy really had something special, I think, right around then. So yeah, I think Jacobs warrants the volume-based RB1 treatment. He's right there with Rashad White, which makes sense. Like, Rashad, again, we like to hold some of these things against guys. Rashad White can't even crack 3.7 yards per carry. We don't care because he gets a ton of volume. So that's why I feel with Jacobs, I'd be very surprised if he's still on the team by 2026. I guess they got younger, but I mean, we've seen it with Jonesy. It's not like he's all that old in terms of actual mileage and, you know, usage and wear and tear. Unlike Josh Jacobs, who, you know, had the 400 plus touch season, couldn't stay healthy down the stretch last year. So maybe just wasn't motivated. Maybe he was playing more injured than we knew about. But again, John, just again, if the Packers make this move, we're like, okay, well, they run more duo than other teams, and they do this and that. These are the types of excuses we're hearing. Like, if the Washington Commanders gave Josh Jacobs 4 years and $48 million, it'd be a consensus. What the hell are you doing? Washington going to Washington stuff. So, hey, in fantasy land, it works out fine, but rare miss for the Packers, in my humble opinion.
Well, I was hoping you would make me feel better about this whole, you know, trade. Not really a trade, but here we are. Aaron Jones to Minnesota. He's the RB1 when healthy there, right? Over Ty Chandler. Is it more of a RB1A, RB1B situation?
Oh, it's 100% Aaron Jones. This whole Ty Chandler fascination, this dude needed Alexander Mattison to be one of the league's worst running backs and then get hurt. And then, lest we forget, they traded for Cam Akers and were featuring him ahead of Ty Chandler before he sadly tore another Achilles. So Chandler's fine, but, you know, chill out on it already. So, yeah, I think it's going to be the Aaron Jones show. Chandler should get some, you know, as well. But sadly, you know, we're just looking at the opposite of a, you know, great offensive environment to get into. Yeah, you know, Sam Darnold, okay, people will show you the three or four great throws he's made over the years and try to say, oh, he just needs, you know, more time and all that. But, man, just overall sucks for Jones because this – and especially, man, Aaron Jones, and it ended up working out for Joe Mixon to see him, you know, get traded to Houston. Such a great overall, you know, just set up for him. But to see Jones get cut literally like after almost every other like running back room had been filled up already – it sucks, man. I think he could have gotten a lot more than 1 year, $7 million if some of those other running backs hadn't have already been signed. And it just goes to show you that, you know, before you want to call out these players for not being loyal and stuff, what's that say about the Packers and how they decided to handle this? So, sucks, man. Jones, borderline RB2. Father time is an issue. I don't think he's washed. We saw the five consecutive 100 rushing games to end the season, you know. But injuries were creeping up. You know, they don't exactly get better as these running backs get older. Offensive environment isn't great. I have a hard time truly going too hard in the paint after, like, look, any fantasy football player at the end of the day, we're looking at their personal talent, their offensive environment, and their volume. And we can talk about strength of schedule, age, and some other varying factors. But those are the kind of three main things. And when the offensive environment is that big of a potential red flag, I don't love it.
I had about 2 days where I got to think about a Josh Jacobs, Aaron Jones backfield and how that could look.
Oh, what a baller.
And then it all fell apart with Jones getting cut. He was so good in the down the stretch into the playoffs. And I have always thought he was just amazing player. Just really carried him in many ways, with Jordan Love obviously ascending. Almost done with the running back talk, but there's just so many moves. Gus Edwards to the Chargers is very intriguing to me from a value standpoint, fantasy-wise. That opens up Derrick Henry to the Ravens, which is also intriguing to me from a value standpoint because he's going to be going a little bit lower than usual. And then Austin Eckler to the Commanders, which doesn't intrigue me a whole lot, but I'd like to hear your thoughts about it. And, of course, Tony Pollard replaces Henry with the Titans. Is Derrick Henry still a fantasy? Let's start with him because he's, I think, the big name here. Is he still the fantasy RB1? Do you think that Father Time is going to catch up with him, or is he built different?
Seems pretty built different to me, man. So, you know, top 12, I think it's fine. Cause again, this is a guy who we're used to taking with like the freaking, you know, top five overall pick. And I know Underdog Fantasy is, you know, definitely known for just really loading up more on wide receivers earlier than you're going to see in other drafts. But right now, like Henry's going in round four. So I just think that that overall difference in his, you know, usual price really can't make him a target. Cause based on what we've seen on the field, man, again, once we get past the yards per carry thing, I don't think we're looking at a guy that is actually been falling off that much. What has fallen off is the entire rest of the Titans offense. So when you look at yards before contact per carry, the Titans over the past four seasons have ranked 13th, 18th, and then 30th and 30th over these past 2 years. Meanwhile, Derrick Henry has been a top nine running back in yards after contact per carry each and every year along the way. Now, would you guys like to know who the number one offense in yards before contact per carry is over the last half decade? Yes, that's right. It is your Baltimore Ravens. So Again, I think Lamar Jackson's gravity that he has in the read option game is a big thing for that. We see this in Philly as well. As great as the offensive lines are, just having that quarterback that puts the fear of God into your defensive ends when they crash down, I think is huge. And accordingly, Henry, on this contract, I think he's going to get fed the rock and be the closest thing we've seen to kind of like that 2019 Mark Ingram in this Ravens offense. So love it. Turn 30 in January. I get it. That is about when they're ready to fall off. But I have a hard time, John, if the only thing I can say bad about a guy is like they're old, they're probably going to fall off at some point. I struggle to get behind that when we haven't seen any signs of it on the field with Henry. I don't believe we have.
RB11 right now at underdog, you alluded to that. I think if we're seeing Henry in the third round, half PPR, that's going to be tough for me to pass up.
Yeah, one final note, too. This is a really good stat from a buddy on Twitter. Derrick Henry's, Ryan, at @FF_RyanB, really good follow. Henry's max speed in 2023, next gen stats, was actually faster than anything he achieved in 2019 and 2020. So I think we're looking at the same beast, man.
Yeah, Tennessee running backs averaged 2.2 yards before contact. You alluded to this per attempt last season. Ravens were second, 3.2 yards before contact per attempt. I think we have to look at this Ravens offensive line. I know they lost their tackle, so we got to keep an eye on that. But they seem to just reload every year on the offensive line, always have a good running game. So I'm excited about this King Henry and Baltimore situation. Gus Edwards may be a nice value with the Chargers, depending on who else they add. Eckler out of the way, Gus Edwards can compile to 240 carries and score some touchdowns. If you have any thoughts, just chime in. Eckler, I think, is going to probably just kind of form a passing down role with Brian Robinson, who was pretty good last year. I don't see him taking over and having a 250, 300 touch season at this point in his career. And then Tony Pollard, I think, kind of threw a lot of cold water on the Tyjae Spears ascension. I mean, it was about a 6-day, Tyjae Spears RB2 season there before the Pollard signed. The Titans are going to be an interesting team. We got to talk about Calvin Ridley as well, but any thoughts on Edwards, Eckler, or Pollard?
Yeah, quick on Gus. I mean, just where's the best place he can go? I don't know. Probably the John Harbaugh's, freaking brothers team, who has a massive hole to fill at running back. So definitely seems like the organization wants to, get back to, establishing the old run. We've obviously seen the wide receiver moves and all that. So I think Gus is going to have a pretty similar role as he did in Baltimore. No, he's not going to be involved on pass downs, but would it surprise us if we look up at the end of the year and there's 200 carries, solid 4.5 yards per pop, and potentially double-digit touchdowns if the offense can get going? I would not be shocked. And like you said, pretty great value accordingly. With Eckler, can we quit acting like this guy's entire career has just been that one slow-ass run against the Packers? I mean, we have context, guys. The dude suffered a bad high ankle sprain in week one. He hit 19.6 miles per hour in that week one game against the Dolphins when he had like 160 yards, halfway through the fourth quarter. So, yeah, it sucks when NFL players come back and they try to play through injuries and they're not nearly as effective. But it's just amazing to me how we have a guy who's literally 12 months removed from working as the overall PPR RB1. Joining an offense that, to be fair, has thrown the football to his running backs almost more than any group over the years. New, stuff coming in. But Anthony Lynn, his former Chargers head coach, is the run game coordinator in Washington. Even Cliff Kingsbury, like we've seen him over the years, really make some good things happen with James Conner, even Chase Edmonds and Kenyon Drake briefly with those Arizona Cardinals teams. So, no, it's not a situation where we necessarily expect Eckler to get 300, 400 touches. But he's never really been that guy in the first place. I mean, we're talking about a guy with 206 carries in the season as his all-time single-year record. So I don't think Brian Robinson's going away. I don't think, Eckler is someone we need to be pushing to top 12 or anything like that. But man, outside the top 24 for a guy that was literally a fantasy star for the better part of the last half decade until he came back from a high ankle sprain on a horrible offense at that point with no Justin Herbert, I think we're maybe overreacting just a little bit to Eckler. The dude's 28, man. So, yeah, I'm more in on Eckler, I think, than a lot of people. And I'll take that discount 8 days of the week there, especially if we're on a team where, you're going hero RB, you're going zero RB, you already got your wide receivers. I think Eckler's going to be a perfectly fine target down there. The Tony Pollard situation sucks. I take Eckler over Pollard straight up, I think, at this point. The Titans' O-line remains a disaster. Who knows with Will Levis? I don't hate them throwing a lot of money at Calvin Ridley. They still have a ton of cap space. And if they can just get through this year and figure out if Will Levis is the guy or not, that should be considered a victory for them. And hey, you know, adding some money to try to figure that out, awesome. We're not going to have to waste a year of Will Levis like, you know, the Bears did with Justin Fields, actually 2 years, you know, in that case. So yeah, Pollard, man, probable split backfield. It's a guy who I know we can look at and say, oh, PFF's, you know, number one leading rusher from week 11 on last season. That's when he said he was healthy. That's cool. I appreciate PFF more than most. I really do. But I like to use it as a piece of the puzzle, not the entire puzzle. And when the dude's yards per carry goes from 3.9 to 4, when his explosive run play rate is still not even close to what we saw in pre-2023, I have a hard time putting all my eggs in the PFF basket saying Pollard magically got fixed. That, and you know, I know I just said, like, let's not put all of our, you know, freak out about one specific run from Austin Eckler. I want to make sure I'm not doing that with Pollard, because my God, how did he not score that touchdown against the Dolphins from the 2-yard line? So again, I understand pre-2023 Pollard, very, very explosive, very, very good back. But man, just think, again, going to such a bad offensive environment, probable split backfield more so than he had last year. Pollard at this point needs to be one of the NFL's most efficient running backs for him to work out in fantasy land, and I'm not going to make that bet.
So just back to Washington for a second. If both players stay fully healthy, which Robinson or Eckler, who sees more touches?
Robinson more total touches, but I think Eckler could outscore him. I'm going to be very interested to see who's on the field when they get, you know, inside the 10-yard line. Because that was Eckler's, you know, calling card. It was just not only the pass-catching PPR cheat code, but especially once Melvin Gordon was gone, like they were down to just legit feed him those goal line touches. So Brian Robinson, yeah, it makes sense if he is the bigger goal line back. So the goal line touches are going to change things, I think. But I think accordingly, man, Eckler, again, as this kind of RB3 at this point, like, I think he can finish that. And I think this is one of those rare backfields where we could see multiple top 24 running backs. This happens, it's happened 1.9 times per season over the past decade. So one of my hot takes going to last year was I thought Brian Robinson and Antonio Gibson could get there. Sam Howell, you know, his tendency to take sacks didn't exactly help me out with that one. Not a given that'll change it. But I do think, you know, Eckler and Robinson, maybe that's a situation where the answer is both, because if either guy goes down, look, all of a sudden looking at a situation where we're probably ranking, you know, no Eckler, Robinson all of a sudden becomes arguably a top 15 running back. And a similar sentiment is true with no Robinson.
Yeah, Eckler going RB25 at an underdog. Robinson in RB31 right now at underdog. That's interesting.
They both got some outs. We got to appreciate that.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk about receivers. Gabe Davis signs with the Jaguars. Calvin Ridley signs with the Titans. And Curtis Samuel signs with the Bills. So some teams there that are all kind of involved and connected. Was this a good move for Ridley's fantasy value? I can't think it would be, but they threw the bag at him. So they're going to use him. But we're going from Trevor Lawrence to Will Levis. We've also got DeAndre Hopkins in the fold. And who's the winner in Jacksonville? Is it Christian Kirk? I mean, Gabe Davis is a kind of a low volume guy. I have to think that Kirk's gonna be back, you know, in the top 20 this year as well.
Sounds like, I mean, based on the reports we had about the Jaguars very much wanting to bring Ridley back, it sounds like the plan was for Davis to be more of a replacement for Zay Jones. And then we had that, you know, rumor coming out about the Zay Jones and the first rounder for, you know, Brandon Ayuk out there. So I don't think Gabe Davis is going to do anything more than he did in Buffalo. If he can just do what he kind of did and be that boom and bust wide receiver 4, probably a net win for him. I'm kind of with you on Ridley too, man. Like, this happens every offseason because similar sentiment with, you know, the NFL draft, but like, because we're talking so much about Calvin Ridley, and to his credit, after Evans and Pittman and T. Higgins, you know, got tagged and signed, Ridley was the best remaining free agent wide receiver. But let's not forget what happened last year, guys. Like, this wasn't pretty. Wasn't pretty at all. As much as we can blame, you know, the usage and, oh, you know, Ridley wasn't used enough in the slot. He's more of a Z receiver, not an X receiver. I hear that. I don't know if reuniting with the passing game coordinator from the team that we hated how he used them is necessarily a solution with an objectively bad quarterback downgrade. So, you know, I had a video I put together, you know, shortly after the season that went kind of viral, where it was just Trevor Lawrence's near-miss touchdowns. And, like, on the one hand, the fact that Ridley got open enough to drop 3+ touchdowns last year and had all these other ones where he only had 1 foot in bounds. Hey, you know, he's really close to making it happen. And I would have been more in on expecting a rebound for him staying in Jacksonville. But this history, John, of these wide receivers changing teams in free agency, teams don't let really good wide receivers hit the open market. They might get traded, you know, or they might get extended, but they so rarely hit the open market. And accordingly, the ones that do and get paid, we rarely see work out in fantasy land. Now, from 2016, just a, I know, kind of arbitrary, but this is when I started tracking it, so give me a break. Calvin Ridley now with $92 million is the largest wide receiver contract signed with a new team. Behind him, Christian Kirk, the Jaguars. Okay, worked out. Okay, enough. Kenny Golladay, the Giants. Sammy Watkins, the Chiefs. Pierre Garçon, the 49ers. Allen Robinson, the Rams. Tyrell Williams, the Raiders. Allen Robinson, the Bears. Paul Richardson, the Washington. Marvin Jones, to Detroit. So, okay, Marv. A-Rob on the Bears and Kirk, those are okay, but 9 times out of 10, man, grass is not greener on the other side for these free agents. I will not be chasing Calvin Ridley up draft boards if he is anything more than kind of this borderline wide receiver 3.
Yeah, I did a study a long time ago with the free agent receivers, and unless they're getting a quarterback upgrade or a role upgrade, then they usually finish worse fantasy-wise, and Kirk was, you know, the most recent exception. He went from 103 targets to 133 targets going from Arizona to Jacksonville, which was, you know, the big reason he ended up with 1,100 yards and 8 touchdowns. And, you know, and you could probably, you know, probably say it's a wash at quarterback between Kyler Murray and Trevor Lawrence, or maybe
he had, he had Hopkins to deal with in Arizona during that time. Yeah. So I do think it helped him from a target competition standpoint.
You know,
Zay Jones had like 125 targets 2 seasons ago. So that was, you know, quite the time to be alive. I do think, you know, Kyler does different things better than T-Law, but I do think Lawrence is the more probably fantasy-friendly quarterback for his wide receivers.
I do want to touch on Curtis Samuel because I'm very intrigued by this move. I've been a fan of his a long time. Matt Harmon loves him from a route running standpoint. He's just kind of been he's been used, I would say, properly for spans. But then last year he was doing well and then got injured and then came back. But in his last 4 seasons, when he's played at least 15 games, he's had 4 straight seasons with at least 613 receiving yards. And he's averaged 139 yards as a runner as well. I think this is a pretty big upgrade over what Gabe Davis brought to the table. Do you see him working his way into like a wide receiver 3 every week starter type fantasy season, or is he still going to be in that wide receiver 4, wide receiver 5 type fringe?
It sounds like Diggs is going to be back in Buffalo. You know, he's sending off some of his typical cryptic tweets every single day. So read into that what you will, but man, this feels pretty damn good for me. Like, we're talking about a guy who's the best quarterback that Curtis Samuel has gotten to play with, you know, old right shoulder dead Cam Newton at this point. My man should have had 1,500 yards in 2019 if Kyle Allen knew how to throw an accurate football. I checked before this podcast, John, and Kyle Allen is no longer employed by the Buffalo Bills. Thank God, because I could not go through with that again. So, and you said it, man, in Washington, despite sharing an offense with, you know, a true number one in Terry McLaurin, and even having Jahan Dotson, at least in 2022, looking the part of a, you know, legit number two wide receiver, Curtis was the guy outperforming both of them for certain stretches. So reuniting with Joe Brady, who was willing to, you know, feed him the football in different ways back in that 2020 Carolina season, I think is best case for Curtis, because he really is that versatile chess piece that if you have an offense that knows how to use him right, can get the most out of him. So again, mentioned in 2019, like, he is a guy that can stretch the field. He's caught 25 of 29 deep targets that were deemed catchable by PFF over the past 5 years. So that's solid. And then also, man, just what he can do on the ground in terms of yak. I think it's a new addition to a Bills offense that has been missing it. So obviously Diggs, you know, he had last year actually had some really cool yak plays early on in the season, especially that Dolphins one. So not saying Diggs can't get yak, but beyond him, man, it's been old Cole Beasley, you know, very old John Brown, you know, a couple years ago at that point. Great players in their prime, but just not at this point. Gabe Davis has never been a yak dude. They tried to make Isaiah McKenzie happen, but, you know, they replaced him with Deontay Hardy and Trent Sherfield last year. It just didn't quite work out. And accordingly, we're looking at an offense that's just 29th in yards after the catch per reception over the past 3 seasons, just in terms of their wide receivers. So Curtis Samuel, again, I think adds new juice to a wide receiver room that needed his specific skill set. And hey, maybe we'll give him a few carries too. Among all running backs with among all non-QBs with at least 120 rush attempts since 2017, 120, so I could screw over Devin Achane, my apologies. Number one in yards per carry is Deebo Samuel, and number two is Curtis Samuel. So I do think, again, that versatile Swiss Army knife chess piece fits him well. And yeah, we have guys like Matt Harmon, Josh Norris, you know, true OGs in our industry also supporting him. I'm back in as well.
Yeah, he could play outside as well. He's good. He's got 4-3-1 speed. Could replace Gabe Davis, his role, and then have another role on top of it as well with the rushing and the other things that he can do with the yak, as you mentioned. So still, I'm excited. Yeah, and wide receiver 65 right now over at Underdog. So he might be the number two option there in that passing game. We shall see. The Falcons signed Darnell Mooney. So to replace Darnell Mooney, the Bears traded for Keenan Allen. I don't think it actually worked out that way. It was probably one before the other. Maybe the Bears just let Darnell Mooney go and always had their sights set on Keenan Allen. But Kirk Cousins has another weapon in Atlanta. We're going to talk about Kirk Cousins in a minute. And rookie quarterback has a really nice weapon in Keenan Allen. We don't know which rookie quarterback. We think it's going to be Caleb Williams, but we're not 100% sure on that. They're playing coy. Mooney caught 81 for 1,055 yards and 4 touchdowns in his second season. Last two seasons have been huge disappointments for him, but he's, you know, there's been some things working against him, quarterback change, DJ Moore coming in. So I think he's got some upside there as a number two, potentially number three option behind Kyle Pitts and Drake London in Atlanta. And then of course, Keenan Allen has missed 11 games, I think, in the last two seasons. So that's the one concern as he entered, but it was his age 31 season, and he had a career high 96 yards per game for the Chargers, catching 108 passes for 1,243 yards, his most since 2017, and 7 touchdowns. What do you think of, number one, Keenan Allen with the rookie quarterback DJ Moore in the fold? Is he still, his fantasy value still the same, or is this going down? As we talked about free agency, this is not a free agent move, but wide receivers changing teams, going to a rookie quarterback. I think his free agents or his fantasy value takes a bit of a hit. And then touch on Darnell Mooney if you want to.
Yeah, with Keenan, I mean, he's certainly not someone that, you know, we're going to be trying to jam into our top 15 like we would if he was still in LA. But man, now we're talking about this dude as a middle tier kind of wide receiver three with guys like, you know, Amari Cooper and, you know, the Christian Kirks and Terry McLaurins of the world. I think that's pretty fair. And again, hey, we probably thought the same thing when he had to go ahead and start catching passes from Justin Herbert. So not saying Caleb is going to be, and I am. I mean, it's like minus 5,000 that Caleb goes to Chicago. So I am going to go ahead and assume that it is going to be Caleb Williams there. And just based on, again, what we've seen from Caleb as a passer, yeah, not the most ideal situation for Keenan. Again, being the number one for Justin Herbert, undisputed pretty much, would have been awesome. But I don't think he's completely washed by any stretch of the imagination. I mean, Keenan was right. Like, why would he take a pay cut when he just had arguably his best career season? So I'm with him there. But yeah, obviously DJ Moore, a bit more target competition than I think even Mike Williams was bringing over the years. So hard not to downgrade him a little bit, but kudos to the Bears. Yes, they did everything freaking wrong with setting Justin Fields up for success over those first two seasons in particular, but they seemingly learned their lesson. And now we got Caleb walking in to a not completely shitty team with two legit great wide receivers, a couple more quality tight ends, and even some running backs that can catch the ball out of the backfield. So I think the Bears offense could, you know, maybe not be top five in the league, but would it surprise me if they were actually a top 15, top 16 scoring offense? Not really. So good news on Keenan. I'm kind of out on Mooney. I mean, are we really chasing, again, you mentioned the 1,000-yard season, but like even in that year, he was a wide receiver 29 in PPR points per game. Like we've all seen the clip of him double moving Jalen Ramsey and then not even catching the ball. Like that's the highlight we have to really go off of after 4 years. His most recent highlight is having a Hail Mary in his lap and then kicking it to a Browns defender. That was pretty cool, I guess. So I don't know, man. I was talking with some people on Twitter and they were saying, you know, Mooney was actually getting a lot more open last year, even if he wasn't getting the targets. And that's a sentiment I actually have with Rashad Bateman when I was kind of watching a bunch of Ravens games at the end. So I need to go back and, you know, look through Mooney more specifically, even like on his non targets potentially, to see if I'm missing something here. But I just see a wide receiver who, other than a year where he, you know, wasn't even that efficient, man. He had like 80 catches on 140 freaking targets in 2021. I think he's a mediocre wide receiver. And honestly, in Atlanta, it's Kirk. I mean, really, Kirk Cousins, man, we're expecting a 36-year-old quarterback coming off a bad Achilles tear. This is so every year in March now, I try to do an injury article update so I don't accidentally draft like a TJ Hawkinson and not realize he's going to miss the first 8 weeks of next season. The fact that Cousins tore his right Achilles is huge because, again, just you don't need to be a quarterback guru, but if you're a right-handed quarterback, you're pushing and turning off your right foot. Guys like Aaron Rodgers, your left foot, it's not that big of a deal. So guys like, you know, Jesse Morris have gone on saying that this could actually be a bit more like the Joe Burrow calf injury last year. And we kind of saw how that limited him, both his arm strength and his mobility in the pocket. So yeah, Kirk got that bad, man. Good for him. But man, unless we get that 95 to 100% version of Kirk Cousins, I don't know that we should be expecting his number three, probably best pass game option to be doing all that much in fantasy land. So I'm cool with the Drake London, Kyle Pitts bombs because Lord knows it's going to be better than the Desmond Ridder and Taylor Heineke experiences. But Kirk Cousins, this whole Falcons offense, man, it's giving me some pause overall.
Deontay Johnson traded to Carolina. You mentioned Adam Thielen earlier. I think it was before the podcast started. What do you think about him in Carolina? Like, it's, you know, he's going to be the number one target. We got the new offensive coordinator, head coach in there running the offense, Canales. And maybe, you know, is this Bryce Young going to break out this year with Deontay as his number one target?
Well, you know, we can talk about Deontay regularly getting more separation than almost any wide receiver. He got a wide receiver 8 finish playing with noodle arm end of his career, Big Ben. Or we can just mention that one time where he didn't see a fumble rolling around on his by his feet and conclude he sucks. Never mind that he caught a touchdown that Gene Steratore said should have been a touchdown the play before that stupid ass fumble happened in the first place. But no, we're just going to slander my man. So I hope that we can now find out if the problem was actually Bryce Young or not, because again, pretty much every stat says that Bryce Young, one of the worst rookie quarterbacks we've ever seen last year. So great addition from Carolina. Obviously don't have a ton of draft capital to be able to add too much more. They'll probably get a day 2 wide receiver, which will help. But yeah, man, I love it. I think, again, looking at Deontay, shout out ESPN's receiver ratings. Their open score in particular is my favorite because a lot of separation metrics you'll see. I love next gen stats and stuff. They're trying to do their thing, but they're usually just tracking separation at the catch point. So you end up seeing these like old washy like tight ends. Like Jesse James led the league in separation one year because he's just catching, you know, passes in the flat. There's no defender 10 yards from him because they're just going to rally up and go get him. Deontay Johnson, though, open score last year, he was 11th. In 2022, first. Before that, fourth, third, and second. Watch the All-22. Listen to Matt Harmon. Do whatever you want to do. Deontay Johnson knows how to get open better than just about anyone. And that's something that was missing badly in this Carolina Panthers offense last year. So I would like to think, again, they're going to add someone else. But Deontay Johnson, man, the way I see it, once we start going through, because I don't think he's going to be cracking anyone's top 36 anytime soon, I think Deontay Johnson will be one of those guys where you make your fantasy projections and it's going to be hard not to give him 120 plus targets. And when you see the guys he's going around, I don't think they're going to be all that close to the triple digit mark. So Deontay, to me, even if he's not going to return to those, you know, top 10 wide receiver heights, he's cheaper than ever. He's in an offense that doesn't have too many other avenues to go with the football. I am back in on Deontay Johnson in 2024.
Yeah, I know he's going to end up higher once the projections start rolling out. I have him at wide receiver 32, and he's going wide receiver 43 off the board.
You get it. You get it.
Yeah, well, you run the numbers. Numbers don't lie, you know. Somebody's got to catch the ball, and it's going to be him. He's actually really good. All right, Marquise Brown signing with the Chiefs. Sounds like he took less money, shorter contract to play with Patrick Mahomes. Feels like he has something to prove. He's got he's only 27, entering his age 27 season, coming off a 574 yards, 101 target season. Question I have for you is, who's going to see more targets between him and Rashee Rice?
Oh, I think it's Rice for sure. I think Brown is coming in as more or less like an overqualified field stretcher. Great Twitter follow, Jetpack Galileo, had a cool kind of talking on this where he was just talking about how, you know, in the Kansas City offense, like Travis Kelce is the ISO winner. Tyreek Hill has gone to Miami and now he's their ISO winner. But in Kansas City, Tyreek, you know, his kind of, I think, not being thrilled about how many opportunities he was getting came down to the fact that he was just like being used as pretty much like the greatest field stretcher ever. And it still worked out fine. You know, they won a Super Bowl together. He put up some big time yards, but I think that's more or less what they're bringing in Hollywood to do. So Kelce and Rashee Rice roaming those underneath areas of the field. I agree with the idea that, you know, wide receivers kind of control their own average target depth, but not really a coincidence. coincidence, I think, that over these past two seasons, we've seen Mahomes actually start to dip under that 7-yard average target depth. He's been a lot more willing to just spray that ball around to Kelce and Rashee Rice and let them pick up some yaks. So with Marquise Brown, fantastic real life upgrade, but man, talking about the number three wide receiver and an offense that, let's face it, man, 2 years running hasn't really produced any sort of consistent wide receiver goodness other than Rashee Rice, who is primarily used as more of a low A-dot guy. If Marquise Brown is someone that's going to be threatening the position's top 24 or even top 30, I'll probably be underweight relative to the field.
Yeah, I think he's top 40 for me. Just like a big upgrade over MVS, but volume that won't be there. I agree with you that Rice is likely going to see more targets, and obviously Kelce will as well.
And to be fair, shout Scott Barrett, good stat. Only Aaron Jones spent more total games on the injury report listed as questionable than Brown last year, 6 different games. Like, he never seemed healthy with that heel injury. If you want to look at the unrealized air yards, you know, leaderboard, you'd always see his name up there with Chris Olave and Davante Adams. So definitely wasn't easy for him. I mean, we saw him be the PPR wide receiver 5 during the first 6 weeks of 2022. So not hating so much on the player, but I think this, as great as the Chiefs passing offense is, and, you know, similar sentiment for Buffalo, like, the complimentary wide receivers, I just don't think are going to be leaned on as much as we would expect. He's going to need to be, you know, one of the league's most efficient receivers, I think, to boom in a meaningful way.
All right, we're running a little bit long, so let's jump ahead. We've already talked about Kirk Cousins and your concerns with his Achilles. You touched on Sam Darnold, maybe not tearing it up for the Vikings. I'm interested to see what it looks like they're poised to draft a running back or draft a quarterback as well. So we'll see who actually starts for the Vikings there. But what about this Pittsburgh situation? The quarterback room has changed a lot in the last week or so. Russell Wilson in as the starter, Kenny Pickett, asked for a trade. Then the Steelers trade for Justin Fields. Mike Tomlin has already told Wilson that he's going to be the starter. Is this, you know, is Wilson supposed to mentor Fields? It seems like he's willing to do that. He's been very welcoming on Twitter, but this is also looks like something that could fail spectacularly. What do you think?
I really hope that's just Tomlin saying that, or the reports saying that, because the Steelers don't want to be facing just every single press conference for the next, you know, 6 months. Oh, who's it going to be between Russ and Fields? Like, I understand, like, when you brought Russ into Denver, like, that you trade that much for him, he's making that many millions of dollars, you kind of got to give, it can't just be a straight meritocracy. Same thing when you, you know, draft a quarterback first overall, even if he's getting outplayed by some 30-year-old veteran, you kind of just give the other guy the job. That's not what we have here. We have Russell Wilson on the vet minimum, who's been with the team, 6 days longer than Justin Fields? So if this is not a legit competition, I don't know what the hell is going on. If it is a legit competition, great job, Pittsburgh. You guys have, the league's cheapest quarterback room, I believe, with two guys who have at least flashed at different points over these past 2 years. Look, when our bar was Kenny Pickett, Mitch Trubisky, and Mason Rudolph, we have cleared that bar, John. But are we that much closer to the Mahomes level things? No, but who is at a certain point? So at the end of the day, I think it helps them for 2024. I do believe that, you know, throwing a lottery ticket on Justin Fields is worthwhile. The Ringer's Ben Solak had a good point where it's just like, hey, if you are going to give out a second chance, why would it not be an absolute freak athlete like Justin Fields, who has flashed the ability to give you, you know, all the tools that you could want, versus someone like Sam Darnold, who has, you know, 56 freaking starts to his name. Jacoby Brissett, you know, all these, Drew Lock, even, who I love, obviously, but all these other quarterbacks are like costing more on the book than Justin Fields this year. So to just not give him a chance is absolutely ridiculous. So most likely answer, probably no. Again, if you just want to go ahead and use our usual, EPA per dropback, PFF pass grade, passer rating, none of these guys were even top 20 over these past two seasons. So I think the big story here, the big winner in Pittsburgh, the one guy I do want to be drafting is probably George Pickens, because no more Deontay Johnson. It's curious to me, obviously Justin Fields, big year, helping enable for DJ Moore. Russ threw 10 touchdowns, I believe, to Cortland Sutton last season. It's interesting to me how much of a bump Drake London is getting compared to George Pickens, when I think if you actually look at their situations, who's got the better quarterback? Yeah, I'll get the lean to Kirk. Who's got more target competition, though? Definitely London, I think, with Pitts, and even you could argue Mooney coming in there. And like, are we that positive that London is that much better than Pickens? You know, maybe people are going to yell at me. I did a poll on my Twitter account. It was like 75% of people are pretty sure London's going to be better. I think London is better, but we're talking about a guy who's now threatening to be a wide receiver 12, and Pickens is still not even cracking the top 30, even though a lot of things have gone right for him this year. So Hey, man, I know with these contested catch artists, sometimes I get a little too carried away. Dez Bryant being one of my favorite players ever, you know, maybe I'm just always looking to find the next, big body contested catch beast out there. But I think George Pickens, man, could be going a little bit under the radar. Could Arthur Smith just mess it up and all that? Yeah, maybe. But some of the Arthur Smith stuff too, man. Tyler Allgeier is pretty damn good. Not saying he shouldn't have. How many touches did Bijan Robinson have? Like, chill out a little bit. Kyle Pitts didn't look good the whole year. They did feature Drake London, and he had piss poor quarterback play. So I'm not going to make this a defend Arthur Smith hour, but some people acting like you'd think that the Steelers aren't going to score a single point this year because he's their offensive coordinator. George Pickens on the rise. Final answer.
I'm going to change the name of the episode to Defending Arthur Smith Hour.
Awesome. Yes, that's what I'm here for.
Speaking of under the radar, Calvin Austin.
Yeah.
Wide receiver 104. I mean, Allen Robinson's gone, right? We know Deontay Johnson's gone.
Van Jefferson, he's not scaring me.
Van Jefferson.
No, I think Calvin should be starting, man. Honestly, he was a guy, he wore, I think he was 19. He had a kind of a similar, build and number as Deontay Johnson. So I'd be watching like all 22 last year. And there were times where I'm like, oh, that was a slick route, Deontay. And it's like, oh shit, that was actually Calvin Austin out there. So his first year, obviously washed. He had that Liz Frank issue. But last year, man, like, no, he didn't make much happen. But again, look at who the freaking quarterbacks were out there and how many opportunities he actually had. So I think it's a great call. I had a startup dynasty draft recently that went, 24, 25 rounds or something wild. I used one of those, later picks on him. So no, I don't think he's someone that we should be exactly chasing up the board. But yeah, in terms of a last round pick, ask yourself, does this guy have a reasonable shot or expectation of starting in three wide receiver sets in a passing game that might not suck? Calvin Austin, that applies.
Yeah, he might be better than Van Jefferson. And he might be, we look for players that are getting a one bump spot up the depth chart. But I think with Deontay Johnson leaving and Allen Robinson out, he might jump up two spots with the quarterback upgrade.
Would it be the most surprising thing ever to find out the Steelers of all teams got another like later round steal at wide receiver? Of course
not. I was just gonna say they don't miss it receiver very often either.
Crazy, man.
So Calvin Austin. All right, let's move on to the final segment. Things we learned. This is one's called subtitled Things Ian Learned. What do you got for us?
Oh man. All right. Let's get another hour going here. Okay. I'll keep it short. I will say one thing I got really into, and I think some of the takeaways were good, but I just didn't quite interpret it right. I was looking for a lot of arbitrage versions of players, the cheaper version of guys, which can be really helpful, but I was almost disregarding the more expensive guys always for the cheaper players. So for example, I looked at, Michael Pittman as a cheaper version of DJ Moore. So it was like an undisputed number one wide receiver in an offense that, has a dual threat quarterback. But, I thought the price point was really good for Michael Pittman relative to DJ Moore. Yeah, the answer is both, man. Just because you find a cheaper, version of a Lambo doesn't mean the Lambo isn't pretty cool as well out there. DeAndre Swift, Antonio Gibson, Travis Etienne, Kenneth Walker, TJ Hawkinson, Darren Waller. Yeah, I was certainly more wrong on some of those arbitrage versions than others. But again, it's just trying to look more so at each player individually and not getting off of one just because I think there could be a cheaper version of them down the road, something I'm going to work on. Also, listening to this, trying to really balance more of the coach speech stuff, shout out to the coach speech index. They do a great job and everything. But like, for example, everything, hearing from Mike McCarthy and the Cowboys, we were all kind of expecting them to be a little more run heavy. But if we had just, I'm not saying you did this, but if I had taken a little bit of a step back and been like, okay, Tony Pollard is their freaking RB1 now. Rico Dowdle or whoever's going to be there too. Yeah, like, no, they're not going to be this run-heavy offense. They're probably going to have to lean on Dak eventually, which they end up doing. So just trying to balance that because as much as, we can sit back and say, and this kind of annoys me, man, because it's like, oh, how are you not on Puka Nacua and Kyren Williams? And then pull out this random camp report from August. Like, this wasn't the same damn organization that was hyping up Allen Robinson as the second coming of Jesus, 12 months before. So, yes, that was cool. We also had, Justin Ross and Darren Waller and Calvin Ridley hype going insane during the exact same time period. So I think just doing a better job about looking at each player individually and, you know, probably guess what, you know, spoiler guys, taking more time to do so would really help out. And, you know, not kind of letting some of the noise around certain situations or archetypes overly get to me. Hope that made sense.
It did. And I would just comment on the coach speak and, you know, index. They do a great job as well. But just from our, you know, trying to parse out what I've always done is everything in camp is positive. Almost everything. And there's varying degrees of that, right? So what I look for is, and I didn't see it with Puka or Kyren for that matter, but I mean, the Rams, they did kind of tell us what they were going to do, but they really didn't tell us. But you have to look at the pecking order of the receivers. If you're looking at Puka and saying, okay, where is he? Is he lining up with the starters now? Or, you know, things this good where he's one or two, you know, with Cup going into the season with another injury. Maybe that should have been a little more obvious to us. The other thing is anything negative in the preseason is huge red flags because almost everything is positive, right? So if you hear anything negative, it's just raising sirens and are blaring in my ear whenever that happens. So I like it. So is that all you learn in 2023? You're gonna arbitrage? You
know, that's watch out for the arbitrage? Now I should just win every single league I ever enter every again. I will say too, man, maybe just you better have I think before the season starts or before we start really drafting, look objectively at some of these teams that we just know are going to suck. We know they're going to be bad scoring offenses. Once, you know, we get kind of the lines for all the games and stuff, like we can go ahead and look at the Vegas Superbook stuff and kind of see the over-unders for every game and end up seeing like who Vegas thinks are going to be the best and worst offenses. And like you look at it, the bottom six scoring offenses from last year, the Titans, the Steelers, the Jets, Rodgers got hurt. Okay, that's a little bit different. The Giants, I guess you can argue Daniel Jones, but even then, you know, we should have been skeptical. The Patriots and the Panthers, like we were pretty sure those teams were going to be pretty, pretty horrific. You know what I'm saying? So yes, you are going to find, you know, a Houston Texans team that's going to take a major leap and it's not, you know, the biggest rule of thumb, but I want to really be careful about spending high-end draft picks on anybody involved with just an offense that, again, we expect to be pretty much dog shit. Maybe I wouldn't have been drafting freaking Jerry Jeudy in the fourth round last year if I had taken that advice a little bit more to heart, because as much as I have tried to look at this and, you know, run studies and showed that running backs in particular have a better chance on bad bottom 10 scoring offenses of still putting up good fantasy numbers relative to other positions, but even running backs, like they're still not even close to as productive on bad offenses as they are on good offenses. Like, welcome to my TED talk, shocker. But I do think, again, sometimes we get enamored. Oh, Ramondre Stevenson, three down roll on this Patriots offense. Are the Patriots going to score 15 points a game? Bill O'Brien was brought in to solve all their problems. And, you know, we were still kind of looking at it without enough skepticism as we should have been. So really just, you know, refraining from going overly hard into paint on some of those bad offenses. Another thing I'm going to try to go out of my way to do this year.
Well, in defense of summer 2023 us, wasn't Bill O'Brien like a huge upgrade over Matt Patricia as an offensive coordinator? I mean,
it was supposed to be. It wasn't.
It didn't work out. It did not work
Matt
out.
Matt Patricia averaged like that the 2022 Patriots averaged like 7 points per game more than the 23 version. So
right.
Brittle.
Simpler days, simpler times. All right. Thank you for coming on the podcast, Ian. Is there anything or Fantasy Life or your Twitter, anything else you'd like to plug before we go?
Yeah, just go check us out over at fantasylife.com. Daily newsletter, always free. Everything we have is free. A lot of really cool stats. You know, I'm pumping out content each and every day. Really starting to get into, again, some of these draft prospects. So got Caleb Williams draft profile coming up tomorrow. And then getting on to the other quarterbacks coming up. So a bunch of free agency goodness. And yeah, at iHeartIts if you're into the Bird app as well, or X app now. Here we go.
Yeah, excellent Twitter follow, Ian Hartheat. So thanks again, Ian, for joining me. We'll see you next time on 4x4's Most Accurate Podcast.